Okay, Alan.
Right. We're going to look at the project update. Sorry, I was down interviewing at potential staff members.
I just want to go through a couple of things. This is paper 8, I think everybody's got, so I don't want to go through and repeat everything that's in here. But I do want to highlight a couple of things, particularly on the first page, IFRS 9, the financial instruments. Probably the most important thing for you as a group is that we're trying to get these finished now. You're not due to meet again till another 3 months or so, and we don't have any plans at this stage to bring anything back to you. And I just wanted to highlight that, because obviously when we do the agenda planning, it's important to see which things we are bringing back and which things we aren't. But at the moment, for classification and measurement and impairment, there aren't any plans amongst the team to bring any issues back to ASAF. If we just go on and have a look at, I think, leases you've just been through, I think. I don't know if Petrina mentioned it, but as part of our planning, we're thinking if there are some issues that come up, because it's going to be another 3 or 4 months before you get back together, there's a possibility that we'd do a telephone call.
Yeah, we just discussed that.
You did?
Yeah.
That's good. I want to mention a couple of things about the disclosure initiative on page 2, and that's just add a little bit of richness to this. I don't know if you have seen, because we think this is it's an important project for us in terms of improving the quality of financial reports. And you know, it's developed is the 10-point plan that we made as benchmark against that. I think a couple of weeks ago, we actually done all right with it too.
Yeah.
Seem to be on track. But what we've also done is we've brought together a team and took our IFRS taxonomy team and brought them into that. So we have one team, and I like to call it. It's both about content and delivery. In other words, what you need to disclose and how you actually present that information, whether that's filing it or whether it's presenting in financial statements, they're all part of the one cohesive team now. And that's part of a move that's happening internally and also, interestingly, with XBRL International, although they use horrible terminology. They say they want to separate the syntax from the semantics. In other words, and the way to think about it is, if you think about a web page, somebody's got a good look and feel for how to develop a web, and somebody's an HTML programmer or something. They're the things we're separating. So we're trying to get it so that the focus is on a taxonomy development. In other words, the way we take our financial reporting requirements and create an electronic format of that. And so the word the term XBRL will almost disappear. You won't see it in many places on our website in the future, because that's in the black box underneath. It's the machinery that drives it, and I think that's a very important change. And XBRL International came to see us 2 weeks ago, and they've had quite a fundamental rethink about how they want to develop. And I think their jaws dropped in a sense when they heard our plans, because that's exactly what they decided independently. So it's right on track for them to basically push XBRL itself into the back room, and everything's about making it much easier for investors to consume information and for preparers to actually put it into a format that they can consume. So that's one aspect of it. We'll be discussing with the IFRS Advisory Council in February. There's a session on there about what is the future of financial reporting in the light of both things like integrated reporting and also a move to more electronic filing of financial statements. And so it's kind of like it's not a blue sky thing, but it's certainly a sort of forward looking to see where how that affects the way we develop our taxonomy, for example, and the way it affects the disclosure project. Related to that is that, and this is I can't give any official information about this, but it is becoming increasingly likely that the US SEC will require foreign filers to file their financial statements, IFRS financial statements, using our taxonomy in XBRL. So, which has been at the moment, there's been a gap in that. Only domestic filers have to do that. They're very keen to fill that gap if they can. So we've been working with them on that process, and it's we don't know when that will actually happen, but it's becoming increasingly likely that will happen. The other thing too, we haven't done much on disclosure at these sessions, but just to let you know, we're right on track to get out some short-term amendments to IS1. And these are, I call these the taking away impediments to good reporting. So this is actually giving people a bit more flexibility to tell their story in their financial statements rather than saying the notes shall follow a specified order. We've got some small changes. One of the examples we have in IS1 at the moment on accounting policies is that if you pay tax, you have to disclose your tax policy. Now, we believe historically when that was put in place, there was an accounting choice in tax because it was the old IS. But IS1's never been changed, so we're changing the example to, I think it is, investment properties. So you either use the, not investment properties, I think it might be IS16, we use the fair value model or the cost model. So it's clear that there's accounting policy choice. Otherwise, the implication was, if you pay tax, you have a tax policy, you've got revenue, and so on. You end up, there almost seems to be, you have to have a policy for everything. So that package of amendments is together. And we should be balloted, I think, and out sort of late January, February, or thereabouts. So that's the first set. We're doing a lot of work on materiality as well. We've established a small working group, in a sense, with our disclosure team, and we've got some representatives from IOSCO and the IAASB to have a look at materiality. It's a tricky project because, speak to Russ, he'll tell me that there are three Supreme Court cases that refer to materiality, and there's a lot of stuff in the US in particular. So we're looking to see whether we can develop or should make any changes in relation to materiality. You know, some of the small things that we look at, the US, for example, I think it says it's material if it probably would affect a decision making of the, I think something like that. Is that close?
Close enough.
We say could, and the interpretation in some of the courts is that could is a very low barrier because, you know, if there's a remote possibility, well, it could. And so sometimes there's an argument that if the barrier or the threshold is too low, you're getting far too much information out, and that doesn't contribute to good decision
probably
making.
Probably 50% or 80%. That's the Supreme Court who decided on that. Yeah.
No. The Supreme Court was very good. I like some of their quotes actually, because they talk about any rule-based requirements or any what's the other term they call it?
Bright lines.
By definition, are over or under inclusive, and they basically should be avoided at all costs. They said when the SEC developed the notion of materiality, it was actually designed to be a qualitative assessment. And it is clearly about making judgment. There's a lovely one of the other quotes I like is they said you shouldn't treat investors like nitwits, and that they basically say that.
Is that what we do?
No, somebody in the States was doing it apparently. But that was a case involving that there was theoretically they were didn't think that the investors would be able to sort out the information themselves, so they didn't disclose it, and the court said no, don't treat them like idiots, treat them like, you know, sensible people. So there's some interesting cases and things, and we've got to be very careful we don't make changes that end up either creating bright lines or conflicting with what has developed, not just the US, but there's case law in the UK and New Zealand. We're doing a bit of outreach to try and look at other cases and the way people have interpreted so that we can have a framework that fits within that. And we're moving as quickly as we can on that because and we expect to take some papers to our board in February or March that have a first look at the materiality. Related to that, and it's the fourth bullet point in there, we actually do have some bright lines in our standards. And one of the issues is the way we present disclosure requirements. We have this very generic statement that you don't have to disclose everything in the standard, you know, if it's not material. And then in some standards we say, at a minimum, an entity shall. And that effectively, I think in common language, you'd think that's a bright line. It's very hard to argue that a generic materiality override can override a very specific, an entity shall. So we're going to have a look at existing standards. We're a bit nervous about jumping into standards and changing disclosure requirements because when you develop those, you also normally develop them in conjunction with the recognition and measurement. In other words, it's a package. So for us to jump in isolation and do that is a very risky thing. But on the other hand, the at a minimums, by creating a bright line, could be the sort of thing we have a look at doing some shorter term changes on as well. Then the longer term thing is looking at replacing ISs 1, 7 and 8. It's not a financial statement presentation project, but essentially it can give us, I think, a more of a broader disclosure framework. It's probably broader, I think, than the US, the FASB's looking at, because that's mainly notes. This is looking at the income statements as well and the balance sheet, and trying to get a much a better sense of set of principles in there. So that's in the research phase. We'll wait until the framework's finished before we proceed to do any standards level work on that. But we're certainly the research. And part of that is we're going to be working with standard setters on some components. One standard setter is interested in doing some work on cash flows, and cash flows and accruals and incremental information. We still have this debate about what an accounting policy or an accounting estimate is. And we've one example that's even come to IFRIC is if you change your reference point for discount rates on a pension from, say, German market to European market as a whole, is that a change in estimate or a change in policy? And of course the difference is policies you go back, estimates you go forward. So there's an accounting arbitrage again, and the question is whether or not we should fundamentally have a rethink about that. So I think that's the sort of thing we'll ask standard setters to write a paper for us on accounting policies and versus estimates and changes and so on. So these pieces will feed into the project. So there's quite a bit going on in that disclosure area. And as I said, the short-term ones are there to really get us underway. You know, as Hans has said, if we make these small changes, which are in themselves, people look at those and say, do you really need to make that change? I think there's as much psychology as anything in that. They can see that we're reducing those barriers, reducing the impediments to good reporting, and also refocusing and making people think about materiality a bit more than they perhaps have and moving away from the checklist mentality. I was very quickly just going to mention a couple of the research projects. I said we've made a cautious start to the program. We haven't got a lot of staff working on it, unfortunately, because some other projects have taken a bit longer than we anticipated. But we have done some work on business combinations, and you know, China, for example, mentioned that's important. I was going to mention that in the post-implementation review discussion that we didn't think we needed to ask questions in the request information because we're actually started doing some work on that. The Emerging Economies Group's been helping us, and IOSCO has written to us asking us to accelerate that project. What we're trying to do is to see whether or not we can carve out one aspect of it, and that's the IPOs or the spin-offs, and deal with that separately. The thing that's causing us a bit of grief at the moment is if you lose control of an entity, in other words, you spin the whole thing off, your group changes, and that seems fine. It's when you retain, say, 55% and you only spin off 45% and it's non-controlling interest, it's still within your group. And we think the information needs for those external shareholders are the same, but that's getting very close to a transaction under common control because it hasn't gone outside the group. So we're seeing if we can actually develop some guidance dealing with those spin-offs and leave other internal restructurings alone. We always hate it when you do things in parts or phases because it can be quite damaging if you're not careful, but that's one where we think that might be a potential way ahead. So we've had one paper at the board, we've got an internal session on that next week, and then we expect to bring that back in January, so you'll start to see something there. Discount rates, you should see at our board next month. We've got some work is going on in Australia and Hong Kong, for example, on discount rates. Ours is more of a...
Alan, there's nothing happening. We're waiting for you.
You wait for us.
That's what I checked that with Angus.
Angus, and he said you... Yeah, we had a chat about it last week.
Putting on hold.
Yeah. So I'd send it with the paper. Once the paper's out, that will give us an easy way to see. Share some work amongst the standard setters. The other thing is that it's come up quite a bit in our board. Is the number of issues that, or the projects that probably have got the greatest need. If you have a look at our narrow scope improvements and the issues that are coming to Interpretations Committee, that tells you something about a standard. The equity method, particularly with our, I think the joint arrangements changes haven't changed any of the accounting issues for the equity method, but it's brought them under far more focus than we've had before. And so we're getting a lot of requests on the equity method, post-employment benefits and share-based payments. So we're quite keen to get those up and running because of those issues. It's very frustrating when you know, month after month we look at another issue for ICE 28, we should step back and actually do something more fundamental potentially. But the first thing is we've got to understand really what the problems are. And so that's why it's in the research phase. And I think you're scheduled, Michelle, you are scheduled to bring a paper to ASAP next year in June, I think it is. That's when we think we should, on equity method, for example. So we're sort of doing a little bit forward planning on that to make sure that we've got, get a little bit of momentum in these projects over the next year. And the last two is that there's a lot of work being done in South America on high and hyperinflation and Korea on foreign currency. It's been discussed at groups like the OSSG and GLAS. It hasn't made it to our board table yet. We need to get a pathway onto our board so we can look at those issues and either say, yes, there is a problem, or no, there isn't. I think it's very frustrating for a standard setter to do a lot of work and then find it stagnates for a while. So we'll look at getting staff onto those two particular projects and get the board to discuss those as well. So that's sort of a high level. I don't know if there are any questions about sort of where we are with those. You know, you've done all the standards level projects over the last yesterday and today, but for the developing work, I think that gives you hopefully a bit of a sense of where we're looking.
I'd particularly like to applaud the all the initiatives on disclosure. I think they'll be very, very useful when they culminated.
Kevin?
Alan, IAS 20 and IAS 37, are they on the horizon anywhere?
Hans is going to say, what's 20 and what's 37? What's 37?
Liabilities.
Of course, yes.
Come on, Alan,
I can't remember either. Got to speak in words.
I don't even have one in your nose.
IAS 20, which is it's government grants, is we've been doing a bit of internal thinking. I didn't want to mention it in the rate regulated thing, but we've been thinking a bit, if we did write a standard on rate regulation, we wondered whether we could actually just have a standard called regulated activities. And part of that could be the rate regulation. And emission trading might fit in that, because these are all things where governments actually create. They either take public goods and make them private or something like that. And that they might actually fit in. Those sorts of schemes might fit under one umbrella, and if we did that, that's the ideal time to deal with IAS 20, because the government grants issue is kind of part of that. And sometimes being a slightly more ambitious about a project in terms of thinking about a parental standard actually can deal with quite a few issues at the same time rather than doing it in parts or in isolation. So we haven't got a project to really look at IAS 20 specifically, but we're keeping that in mind as we develop the rate regulation, because you know, rate regulation and emission trading schemes, they operate in different ways, but they involve, as I say, government pricing things and regulating activities. So that's kind of there. 37 is the framework, really, because once we get the liability definition sorted out, I think that'll trickle down into that. You know, Joan Brown was looking at IAS 37, and she's doing the work on the liability side of it, so I think it's a natural thing we would have a look to see, because that's been sitting for a long time. You know, and as Kim said, there are issues in terms of measurement, for example, fair value versus whether you do it, the work yourself, and there's obviously the classic case of is it or is it not a liability.
I remain of the view that if you withdraw IAS 20, everybody will be better off.
Well, yeah, I have that view too.
Quite happy to. And I don't think it's going to guide anything in the areas you're thinking about.
Yeah. And board, 26 as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. You got that one, Russ? 26 is?
No.
Pension schemes. Reporting by pension schemes.
I was just going to say on disclosure framework, we've been doing a lot of work about what the board should do, and we've got some field tests about how an entity should do it, and I'd be happy to share that in March. We're not doing anything on materiality. That's predominantly a legal regulatory issue, not an accounting standards issue in the U.S. But if it would be helpful for the group, we could provide a summary of the feedback that we've gotten. And predominantly what it is we've got different categories, meaning can you improve the disclosures by saying thou shall do the following and rely on materiality. So we've asked people to recreate their disclosures under that approach versus a different approach that has more of an objective base with very little guidance to see how those disclosures would improve. So I'd be happy to present that or give you the feedback, and you could present it in March.
Actually, you raised a really interesting point. All the cases I've seen in the US, none of them refer to the FASB definition of materiality. It's all to do with the SEC materiality.
That's because we don't have a definition of materiality.
Right.
In FASB.
That's right.
In the US, the standard, it's because the accounting standard setter does not require the production of financial statements. It's a legal requirement. It's just when you produce financial statements, it's under the standards programming for US GAAP. And so because materiality is embedded through the courts in a legal, it is a legal or regulatory nature that defines materiality, not the accounting standard setter.
Françoise?
I wanted to react, and thank you for this summary, which gives us a good insight. I wanted to share with you in the group that among our forum of national censuses, there was the disappointment for this session that classification measurement of financial instrument would not be discussed, and even further disappointment that in fact it's considered that this group cannot have any further input. That's the first issue. When I read this paper, and also when I was listening to you, I was thinking that, and it's in a way maybe the next session, but the research project are probably a good basis for having good papers and good discussions within the ASAF. You know, you report on what you're doing with one NSS, that group, this group. Eventually, those people who have an interest in pursuing some previous efforts in some projects would like to be also in the loop and also be able to continue to contribute. And probably that would enrich the project and give also more sharing in the development of subjects which are of interest to many. So maybe that's something that Michelle can look into, how this the ASAF could become more active and also more participants more proactive. Maybe that's the best way to do it on a more multi-participant basis.
No, I think that's a very good point, because I think one of the issues we discussed in the first meeting was that you were coming in on the tail of many projects, and similarly even our discussion paper for conceptual framework was just about there when you first got into the process. You think about equity accounting, if we had in mind that we develop a sort of a 10 or 15 page issues of where what the main problems are, where we could be heading, and discuss that in this forum, then you help actually helping be formative in terms of the decision making, and we understand, you know, what the issues are in different countries. So I agree. It's just you know, it's that developing this group and developing a research program at the same time.
And just apropos your comment on IAS 26, we are balloting a standard right now. We never adopted 26, and very few countries have, I think.
Right.
We all say we're in accordance with IFRS, but under our breath we say but for IAS 26. And in the standard we were balloting now, which we hope will, it's going to be on a fatal flaw version on the web for 60 or 90 days, I can't remember. So it will be finalised in the first quarter of next year. But what we've tried to do is modernise our previous standard into what we think IFRS would require today. So it's sort of linked into the other standards as far as we can. So it may, you know, effectively be a bit of research that you could use for your own thinking.
I think it was New Zealand some years ago asked that we were in.
Well, they have adopted 26, but yeah, they're about the only ones we know of, and they were wondering why they were the only ones.
That's, yeah, pension plans, they're reporting, so it's not really, it's not, general entities don't use it, it's only if you bring reporting retirement benefit plans into the scope of IFRS.
Okay,